Well, first of all, let's get to John Patrick. He always stimulates my thinking and challenges my preconceptions, and I know he's going to do that for all of us in this interview. John is a professor of biochemistry and pediatrics at the University of Ottawa. He does a lot of speaking for both CMDS Canada as well as for us here in the U.S. He speaks both to Christian and secular groups, and I can't think of anyone better to really communicate the gospel and important principles to us than John. Let's turn to him as I talk to him just at our last national meeting. John, it's been great to have you here at the national meeting. And recipient of the Educator of the Year Award, and I can't think of anyone that would deserve it more.
I can't think of anybody who was more stunned than I was.
We did surprise you. You didn't see it coming. We were plotting with Sally in the background.
And I had one minor clue. I was sitting in the front row, and I saw there was a plaque there with my name on it. And until that moment,
yeah.
And then I guessed what was coming, but it was still too late. I was stunned.
They had the plaque covered, and then they gave the plaque on top to someone else, and I saw it as well. But tell me what's been going on. 6 years since we first got together on this microphone. It's hard to believe. What's been going on? What are the trends that you're seeing? What's happening?
Well, what's been going on is that David Stevens has changed my life, basically. I was a comfortable, funded the research physician who could convince the dean that he was working hard when he was working 4 days a week for the university, and the other day reading what he was interested in. And then that tape that I still to this day don't know where it was recorded got to you, and as I say, the rest is history. I'm coming to the end of a 2-year period of unpaid leave from the university, and I've made the decision that I'll continue because there are bookings now into 2004. Mm. My wife still has some ambivalence towards that idea because she is very a particular person, and she says, what's going to happen to those students that you used to have an impact on? Mm-hmm. And that's true. But Augustine College is going to fill that gap to some degree. But it's certainly a change in emphasis. But I think it's the right thing to do. And we're beginning to learn to live this life with no certain income beyond a very modest one to pay the electric bill, so to speak. Mm-hmm. And it's really rather exciting. We're just facing a 2-month period with no significant income with Taiwan and other places. And then I do take August off. And then an unexpected church meeting in California a couple of weeks ago was really hilarious. We went to church before flying home on Sunday morning at a church near to the airport, and the pastor eventually comes up to preach at this very laid-back Californian church. And he says, you know, every now and again you're pressured by someone in the congregation to do something. You know, you're not sure about it. And he said, physician in this congregation persuaded me last night to go to a lecture, and I must say it paid off big time. If the guy was here now, I'd ask him to preach. And then he looked across and saw me in the audience, and he did something which I don't think many ministers would do because they guard Sunday morning.
Yeah.
He said, John, come and preach. I know you don't need any notes. So I ended up preaching for 55 minutes without notes at no time to prepare.
Yeah.
And afterwards, Mike McLaughlin, who was looking after me, put up the big T in the audience, said, we've got to go to the airport. And the pastor said, we can't let this guy go without showing our appreciation. I know he's given up his salary. We should give him a love offering. Well, they just sent the plate round and gave it all to Mike. And I got the check last week, and it will cover the costs for the next 6 weeks.
Wow.
In one totally unexpected sermon. It's an exciting way to be paid.
And I would say to those listening, encourage and get John to come to your area. He'd be happy to do it. Pay him well. Or if not, you just may want to support his ministry. You can send funds to CMDA, and we'll pass them on to him. I think this is important, what he's doing. And we want it to continue. As I introduced him the other night, I said, this is a modern-day C.S. Lewis.
I wish I was.
And, you're the best we got. So I never heard C.S. Lewis, but read his stuff. But it's so important. What else has been going on?
Well, of course, Augustine College is now in its 6th year, too. Mm-hmm. And last week, we had our first CMDA, CMDS, Augustine College, Docs Week. Mm. And we had 24 physicians, 5 from Canada, 19 from the States. And we spent a week educating them. They had a day with me, a day with Edith Humphrey on theology, a day on literature, a day on philosophy, and a day on history, all in the 4th and 5th centuries BC. And they looked at the program initially and they thought, all afternoon, free, every day. By the end of the week, they said, oh, if you hadn't done that, we'd have burned out. So we filled them up in the morning, sent them away for the afternoon, and we had a nice meal together in a different restaurant every night, and then we came back to the college for an evening session. And most evenings, it was still going at 10:30, and they really enjoyed it. It was an entirely new experience. And out of it, I can see another project which I hope will come to fruition, that Augustine is an elitist program. You know, we're taking less than 20 students so far a year, and we don't want to make it much bigger anyway, where they're taught by 20-year tenured professors. This is unique.
Yeah.
There's nowhere on the continent that you can get this. And they've gone off, and they've served us well. They've gone to Wheaton and graduated summa cum laude and other places.
Now, you're talking about high school seniors that come
out
and do their
seniors,
first year.
But we've also had students come one or two a year who've done their first degree and are about to start professional training, medicine or something like that. And they enjoy it too.
Yeah.
And they say it prepares us for medicine.
A real liberal arts education.
In the classic sense.
In the classic sense.
The motto of Augustine is credo et intelligam. I believe in order to understand. Very countercultural, but absolutely true.
Mm-hmm.
What we can understand depends upon what we believe. Missionaries need to recognize that. The reason we can't make so many health projects work in Africa is that we have to work with Africans who still have animistic beliefs.
Mm-hmm.
And that doesn't allow the administrative structure, the administrative thought that underpins it. You give a Toyota to a missionary and you give a Toyota to an African Christian who still thinks paganly, and the one will be running 10 years later and the other one might not be running 10 months later, because maintenance is a Christian thought.
Mm-hmm.
That really needs a lot of unpacking, but it is. If the causal factor in your life is evil spirits, then machines stop because of evil spirits too, and oil is not that important. One needs to think that through. So Augustine understood that. He said, I believe in order to understand, not as the liberals would have you believe, that you understand in order to believe. And if Christians would pay more attention to the way they actually become Christian, they would get that straight, because we have what I call non-explanatory accounts of how God brought us into the kingdom.
Mm-hmm.
You and I, who grew up in Christian homes, we may have been persuaded at one point or another to have a conversion experience. But I think very much we were persuaded to have it. In most of our cases, what happened to us is God was at work on us steadily.
Mm-hmm.
And there was a point, perhaps, at which we realized that. In my case, there wasn't, you know, because I drifted away for a long while. But I was held on to by the story that had been written into me by the way I was brought up and what I believed to be true. And eventually the consequences had to flow. But conversion stories are God coming to us, and they're incoherent at one level. They're non-explanatory stories. You can't take your story and apply it to me or any other person. And when we do that properly, we begin to make real progress. Because then you have an answer to the common question that the medical student faces. Why are you so irrational believing these things? And as I said the other night, it's not irrational, it's super rational. When you become Christian, your life does not fall apart, it falls together. When you go mad, your life falls apart. So by definition, this is not an irrational process. People who become Christian do their jobs better, not worse. It's super rational. Our idea of what is rational is a limited reflection of what God's rationality is. It's bigger, not smaller. Everything is subsumed by it and not the other way around. And we need to say that, because people can then, they have to stop and think, and they can see, well, yes, he's right. He's not more stupid than I am in every other respect. And he says he got better at this after he became a Christian.
Maybe there's something here.
Yeah, I'm not willing to call him a liar.
Yeah.
And then you can go on and point out, as my good friend John Robson does, that the strangest thing that ever happened in the world was the triumph of Christianity. I think he's one of the best columnists in North America, and he put it as only he could. He said, where Greek rationalism and Roman empiricism met, some fishermen a tax collector, and a man who had a seizure on the road to Damascus, persuaded their neighbors, then the whole empire of Rome, that a dead Jewish carpenter was God. How weird is that? Ask the Mithraists. Yeah. After all, Mithraism was the dominant religion. But it was toast after that story took over people's lives. A dead Jewish carpenter was actually God. Hmm. It's an amazing story, but it's true.
Yeah.
And we need to recognize we don't need to rationalize anything for God. All we have to do is tell the truth. We never need to lie for him. And that's what the Augustine Project is about. And I hope with the DOCS program we will create space for them to start thinking about those things more clearly. One of the guys who was there last week, he said, you know, that idea of coming for a week or two for directed reading really appeals to me. And I think many physicians who are suffering from mild burnout, they don't need a psychologist. They'd do much better, actually, to come to us.
Yeah. And get a battery recharged.
Get your battery recharged. Yes, go and read this and then come and talk to me about it afterwards. Or talk to Graham Hunter or Ed Blado or Dominic Manganiello or whoever you want to talk about. Come with a little project, something that's been bugging you, and we'll tell you which books to read, and then you can come and talk to us, write about it, and perhaps you'll write something for Christian Doctors.
Mm-hmm. Today's Christian Doctor.
Doctor, yeah.
When's the next one?
Next year, probably June. Mm-hmm. We'll probably run two next year, I think. We haven't had time to discuss it amongst ourselves yet. That will be next week. But we'll repeat this year's, and frankly, it'll be better next year. Mm-hmm. I can already see ways to improve it. And we'll go on to the next module, which will probably be the Middle Ages, the so-called Dark Ages, which were not so dark.
How do people get information on it?
Visit our website, augustinecollege.org.
Okay.
And go
get
from
all
there.
The information.
I think this is an important project. And
what
I hope to see happen, and here's another stimulus for some of your listeners. I was at, I think it was Kansas, and some very wise family had done something which I've not seen done anywhere before. They had used their money to turn their house into a, when they retired, their city house, into a center for visiting scholars. And they had two or three self-contained rooms where you had a little kitchenette where you could prepare breakfast and you could sleep and a desk and you could study. Somewhat monastic, it doesn't matter. And a place where people could talk and meet, which was beautiful. I think if a few physicians decided they wanted to come and have a reading week, 2 weeks, or reading month next year, and they decided, well, let's get ourselves organized, perhaps you could rent an apartment in the first place, and there'd be an apartment in Ottawa for physicians to come and use. Mm-hmm. And we could use it for other purposes, for other visitors when they weren't there. And out of it, I want to see the growth of the Christian mind again. So that we can do one of the things that I know bugs you. How can it be that we have so many people who claim to be born again, and yet the policies of this nation and even more of Canada show no evidence of Christian input?
Mm-hmm.
That's not acceptable, is it?
No. That's what we're trying to work at, and yeah. It starts with the individual and goes from there.
And you've got to be able to present your reasoning in a way that those who hold power have to pay attention to. And the moment you quote a Bible verse, they switch off. Now, if you paraphrase a Bible verse, and they just think it's a wise comment, that's a much smarter approach,
yeah.
And that works. But we need training to do this stuff. I think Richard John Newhouse is doing that. And one of the other joys of the last 6 years, that hilarious first interview on CDD that I had no idea what was involved, and the highly intelligent barbarian comment that recorded and should have been edited out and wasn't, you know. But I meet these guys on this conference, as always. There's somebody who's read After Virtue and says, yeah. My, that was a hard read. But I have to read it again now because it's changed my thinking. And students and others who've started to read First Things who say, well, I don't read it all, but my goodness, the bits I do read, especially the clue of reading it from the back page forwards.
Right.
Has really helped me. That's encouraging. That I really enjoy.
What other thoughts have been rumbling around your mind since we last talked? You're always into something new.
Well, the other thing that's really has been rumbling around for a long while is our duty towards our brothers and sisters in the developing world, mm-hmm. especially the students again. The end of this month is the Taiwan ICMDA. And
right.
I'm off there, and of course, a bit that.
Are you getting a lot of sleep now? Because you won't get any there.
I won't get any there, but that doesn't matter. They've got 200 students coming this time.
Wow.
And that's the bit I really go for. I mean, yeah, the conference for the so-called, what shall I say, mature, mm-hmm. post-mature in many cases, is okay, but the student conference is fascinating because the energy of the young is. So exciting.
When we were in Durban, John was the Pied Piper. He would come walking into the plenaries with this entourage of 30 or 40 students following along behind him.
That's wonderful.
Grasping little bits of knowledge, staying up half the night in bull sessions and talking in the dorm. And
running the next week in, for some reason, last time I booked an extra week in Durban with nothing to do. And the students filled it up. And we've been back to South Africa every year since. And we'll be there this coming September. Providing we have the travel costs, which I'm sure we will.
Yeah.
And in Africa, unlike here, I can go into any medical school with carte blanche to speak explicitly about how the gospel functions in the context of medicine. And there's no problem in doing that. In fact, they'll ask for more. Whereas here, isn't it amazing? You can give condoms to children and you can't give Bibles.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, what would your founding fathers say about that? So the project that's on my mind is that we need to do something approximating to Augustine in Africa. I even know where I want to do it.
Where is that?
Swaziland. Because God has already provided a building. There's a wonderful guy who was a missionary doc whose wife inherited a mansion in Swaziland. She was distant relative of a man who'd made his fortune in gold, and then he died. And he had this mansion, brought Italian masons out to build it. It's literally a mansion in the middle of Swaziland with a farm attached. And they prayed about it, and they felt convinced that they should run the farm and wait to see what God wants to do. And I've already done one conference for docs there, and I'm going to do another one this coming September. But it's an ideal location to bring African students to educate them, hopefully for something like a month. You know, you could
really get into their heads.
Yes. And send them back to make a major impact, because they're wonderfully evangelistic, but they need training. For those of you listening who don't know about ICMDA,
International Christian Medical and Dental Association.
Yeah. It meets every 4 years. After the Oslo ICMDA meeting, the Brits had taken, I think it was two Nigerian students to Oslo. I was in Nigeria a couple of years ago for the Christian Medical Students Conference that stemmed from those two guys. There were 2,000 students there. They set up their own marquee. They set up their own audio system. They slept on the ground the first night because more came than they thought would. They did the African thing the next night. Everybody was sharing beds all around the place. Wonderful, wonderful enthusiasm for the gospel. Virtually no idea that the gospel has to be thought about. If I hadn't been there, they would have had a diet of pure prosperity gospel, which is sad.
Yeah.
And we need to do something about that. So somehow that's going to happen, whether it's me or somebody else, I don't know, but we have to do that.
Teach us something, John. Stimulate my mind.
That's not difficult to do.
Now be careful.
Well, I can have my own back for last night, can't I? Yeah. One of the brightest minds I ever meet, for those listening. You never tell David Stevens anything twice. And he'll come back to you nuanced into a subtle insult. You know, that's the way it goes. But it's fun. One of the things that was very interesting last week was for the docs to realize that much of the thought that went on in the 4th and 5th centuries BC was, as Graham Hunter put it, God's planning for Kairos. Jesus came not in Kronos time, but in Kairos time. Kairos is the right time. And Graham Hunter made a very interesting and convincing case that actually Socrates and Plato and Aristotle prepared the way so that Paul could do what the Jews had never done. The Jews never transmitted their insights to the rest of the world. They were admired for being upright morally and for being purely monotheistic. But they didn't evangelize, which they were told to do earlier on. But Paul did, and he did it by being able to use his wonderful education to express the gospel in the language of the empire. at a time when transportation was available. Mm-hmm. If you think about what happened, in 300 years, basically, the Christian gospel went from nothing to controlling the empire. And we didn't have any institutions like CMDA or even the church. What we had was people loving one another and thinking about what the gospel meant. And doing things like stopping killing their babies. Whereas we in the church, the evangelical church in North America, practice abortion as frequently as do the unbelievers. That's frightening. We are not as they were in the first centuries. We need repentance. So that week was very interesting as Edith Humphrey and Graham and Dominic showed the people who were there how Greek dualism, which is bad, has become more dominant in the church's thinking than the clear understanding of the Jews that we are souls in bodies, but we know one another as bodies. They are not to be pulled apart. There's to be great honor for life. As Edith Humphrey said, she's very uncomfortable with the word mortal man. The center of our story is not that we die, but that we are to be redeemed and live forever. Mm-hmm. We are mortal men, but that isn't the central part of the story by any means. And so she did a wonderful discussion of the words that are used to describe body and the fact that the Hebrew language doesn't have a word for body as we understand it, corpse, but has many words. It's much more aware of what's at issue here than we are, and did a marvelous job in that process. And we need to keep our eyes on whether we're being dualistic in many ways, pulling apart the mind, the body, and the soul.
And something very common in our society.
Oh, yeah.
Or they leave the spiritual out completely. There is no spiritual being.
Well, most of our colleagues practice what I call schizophrenic medicine. Mm-hmm. What they say they believe shows up on Sunday, and during the rest of the week, they're Greeks. That won't do. That's not what it's supposed to be. Your job and mine is to try and help them to integrate mind and body. Jesus doesn't say that you are renewed by the renewing of your feelings, but the renewal of your mind. I often nowadays misquote 1 Corinthians to be a little bit more subtle than misquoting Romans 12, which I used to do. And I paraphrase too to make it a little harder, and I say, well, what's wrong in the following sentence? Paul says that the preaching of the cross was foolishness to those who were perishing, but to those who have been saved, it is the power of God. Now, of course, the only thing I've done is to change the tense of one verb. But it's astonishing how many people don't pick it up. Because actually they think of salvation as a completed event in the past, which is a kind of divine insurance policy. Mm-hmm. I've got my insurance policy for heaven, now I can live my life.
Fully paid up and don't have to worry about it from now on.
That's right. But it's not. It's those of us who are being saved, present mm-hmm. continuous. And for those of you listening, the question you have to ask yourself is, how was I saved yesterday, mm-hmm. the day before, and the day before that? What evidence is there that I'm any different? How do I think differently? How do I act differently? And
not so much that concept or not the concept of works-based salvation, but the concept of that you're working out your salvation
absolutely.
With fear and trembling every day.
Yeah. And if that isn't happening, there's real questions about what's at stake.
Right.
One of the motivating things for me was realizing that in the Sermon on the Mount, that's exactly what Jesus says in the parable at the end, which you and I both grew up with as a parable used to preach the gospel in the very limited sense, the man building on the rock and the man building on the sand. I'm sure you heard that used mm-hmm. and have used as the believer and the unbeliever. And it's not wrong as an illustration of that, but it's not what Jesus meant. Jesus says, to what shall I liken the man who hears my words and does them? It's not about the initial reception of the word. Both men receive the word, they hear it, but one does it and the other doesn't. It's the doing of the word that he's talking about. Hmm. And he says, if you don't do it, you lose. Now, you know that, don't you?
Mm-hmm. See families that have lost. They made that initial commitment, but they've been building on sand.
You and I have been privileged to have been pushed, you much earlier than I, into doing it. Mm-hmm. And we really did gain, didn't we? Mm. And those that didn't may have a big house and three cars and a triple garage and a swimming pool, and they're miserable. As Robert Spitzer puts it, at the end of your life, you're going to look around and say, how am I different from a pebble? What have I done?
Yeah.
And Jesus doesn't say, well done, good and believing disciple. He says, well done, good and faithful disciple. Somebody who has done what the master commanded. Who was the surgeon who spoke, who got the Missionary of the Year Award?
Jim Jewell.
Jim Jewell. That was a lovely presentation. And the Elijah thing, burn the oxen.
Yeah. You know,
burn the plow and sacrifice the oxen, have a feast and get going.
Yeah. Just do it.
Just do it, yeah. The Nike ad for the right reason, and
yeah,
just for once. But just do it in the context
missions.
Of God, yeah.
Yeah.
Our society is just doing it too, but they're just doing what they feel like doing.
Yeah.
It's not Christian practice.
It's not so much a concept of what you have or what you're own, but where your priorities are. I mean, where are you putting your emphasis, your efforts, your faith? I don't think God judges us on the size of our house, but he does judge us on the direction of our heart and our mind.
Yes.
And it's so important for us to realize that where your treasure is, there's your heart also.
Absolutely, yeah. One of the things that did that for me, and I suspect for you too, is growing up on missionary biographies and missionary stories. That's not happening now.
Right.
I would guess that probably less than 1% of CMDA members could tell me who Charles Simeon is.
Mm-hmm.
Yet in a very deep sense, Charles Simeon is the father of CMDA.
Mm-hmm.
Not just in the 1930s, but at the end of the 18th century. That's where our roots go back to. Now, unfortunately, the biography is out of print. Perhaps CMDA should reprint it.
Yeah.
But if you can get a copy of it secondhand, it's a beautiful copy. Because Charles Simeon went to Cambridge at the end of the 18th century. And in those days, to get your degree at Cambridge, you had also to be ordained as an Anglican minister. And he was an honest young man. And he wasn't even confirmed in the Anglican Church. So he picked up the prayer book to read what he had to do. And he said, I can't do this. And he went around Cambridge looking for somebody who could bring him to Christ. And he couldn't find anyone.
Hmm.
He came to Christ through reading the Bible and the prayer book and prayer.
Hmm.
Now, he never left Cambridge. He spent his whole life there. And when he finished at Cambridge, when he died, his funeral cortege went twice around King's College Quadrangle, and every church in Cambridge was ringing its bells. He was the father of the Cambridge Seven that led to the missionary explosion of the 19th century, to IVCF, and hence, ultimately to us. That's the story of our roots. This is the kind of man he was. He was a wealthy man, and he had a problem getting out of bed in the morning to say his prayers. And so he thought, well, I'll give a guinea to my servant every time I'm in bed after 6 o'clock in the morning. Now, a guinea was a lot of money in those days.
Yeah.
But he found that he could rationalize it on that his servant enjoyed getting the guinea. So he said, that won't do it. So he said, I will throw a guinea through my window into the River Cam outside every time I'm not out of bed by 6 o'clock. He threw, I think it was one or two guineas into the Cam in his lifetime. He was a man who was serious about being obedient to God. And what he did is he went specifically after the brightest students in Cambridge and discipled them. Really, you know, senior wranglers, people who made a major impact on the translation of the Bible and the missionary movement. Now, reading that biography can really fire up a young person.
Yeah.
I think one of the problems with our young people is that we don't give them enough in the way of objectives.
Mm-hmm.
They don't see how exciting the world could be to take on a really big project with God on your side.
He rose to follow after.
That's right. Just keep the master in sight and go where he leads.
Yeah, yeah.
And you've done it. To a lesser extent, I've done it. And the things that you wouldn't miss in your life are the stories that come out of that, like that little event in California last week. I mean, there's no nicer way to be paid, is there?
You know.
And you've had those experiences.
Absolutely. But it's humbling and it's such a blessing.
Oh,
and,
yeah. It brings tears to your eyes.
Yeah.
You know, you're the same, I'm sure. I don't lose it emotionally in a tragic situation like a famine or that sort of thing. You just get on and do what you have to do. But I lose it every time I meet the eruption of grace into life. That's the one thing in life that reduces me to tears every time.
Yeah. People who just love you and care for you and show God's love through them. It just
grace.
Blows you away.
Yeah.
Just blows you away.
And little things, you know. I was in Texas a couple of weeks ago and staying with a lovely obstetrician and his wife, and his daughter's a lawyer. She graduated top of law school, but she looks as though she's about 18, and she's stunning, you know. I'm sure she wins every case because the guys can't get their minds in gear before she's run rings around them. But she's married to a physician, and this guy had heard the Hittites tape just before they had their first child, and he took it seriously, and he's very inventive. He has taught all the stories of the Bible to this little girl who's now 3 and a half. That you can do it. And she's very smart, this little girl. And he's played games with her. So she knows the names of all the characters. So he'll say, what was Moses' sister's name? Was it Jessica? And she'll then go, and then after a minute, she'll say, no, Daddy, it's not Jessica, it's Miriam. She knows all the names. In other words, the stories have gone into her soul by the age of 3 and a half.
Wow.
Do you have any doubt about what kind of young woman she's going to turn into? Because I don't.
Yeah.
She's got her role models in place, you know.
Somebody's planted the seeds, tilled the soil, put the water on, and the plants are already shooting up.
Yeah. Yeah. One of the guys who came to the Augustine conference last week has been doing the same sort of thing, and he's a very fit guy. He brought his bicycle. Said, if you like riding a bicycle, bring it. And he said, that was the best piece of advice you gave, because there's very good cycling around Ottawa, and every afternoon he was off on his bike. But he said he'd taken this little adopted daughter out and on the bike with a trailer, and they came into a meadow, and he stopped, and this little girl, who's, you know, still fitting in a trailer, got up, and she wriggled out of her harness, and then she stood up, and she shouted, put your faith in the Lord Jesus Christ. And she said, Daddy, you shouted too. So he had to, I mean, out of the mouths of babes and sucklings.
Yeah.
Wonderful.
Yeah. Investing at the right time, right, in the right way, in the right amount.
Yeah.
That's great.
So keep up the good work. Take a long rest this summer.
I'm looking forward to a little bit of rest this summer. Well, John, it's been good to have you on again. Thank you so much for all you're doing. Pouring yourself out into people's lives. Everywhere I go, John Patrick has been there before me or is coming after me. Can't begin to keep up with your schedule.
From which it follows that David Stevens is doing the same and more besides. Yeah.
But God has just used you to impact our members' lives and others' lives, and just thank you for your faithfulness. We're praying for you. We want to support you. We want to encourage you. We want to keep you at this for a long time because we need it.
Yeah.
We need it.
And I'll pray for my wife as well then.
And we will be praying for Sally, because I know the sacrifice. I know the stress it is on Jody. I know on Sally as well for you to be away. And I'm hoping she can even travel more with you, which would be great. So Lord bless you.
He does. Thank you very much.
If you'd like to contact Dr. Patrick regarding his availability to speak, check out his website at www.johnpatrick.ca, johnpatrick.ca. He's handling all his speaking requests now, and you can see his calendar there as well as send a request. I really encourage you to get John into your community. It's a powerful experience. We've had him here in the Tri-City area, had him do a grand rounds at the hospital, speak at local churches, talk to the CMDA physician dental group here, meet with the students. John loves to keep busy. It's well worth your investment to impact your community for Christ. And then if you'd like to get some of John's tapes, I love listening to them. I always have to listen to them more than once. They're available, and some of those are listed in the Christian Doctor's Digest companion that's in with this tape.